Lectionary Lab Live is recorded in the studios of the 405 Oxford Group, Gainesville, Florida, and Brasstown, North Carolina, a Two Bubbas and a Bible production.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless, and I'm here with my bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, bubba.
Hey, bubba.
Man, we're going to talk some text today. We have the convergence of the texts and the calendar. We're going to be talking about All Saints Day today. These are the texts for November the 1st, 2015. And let us just put out there, we realize full well there's two sets of texts today. Some of you may be dealing with another set of texts for November the 1st, but we pretty much figure the predominance of our audience is going to deal with All Saints this coming week, since the day literally falls on Sunday. Anything else you want to say about that?
Well, for some of us, the first Sunday in November is always All Saints Sunday, and we move it. Others point to the line that says it can't be moved, and you know, mm-hmm. they do it. So All Saints is a good, important day.
Right.
For many of us. And the theme for today is always remembrance and hope.
Right.
Remembering the saints of the past and join with them in the hope for a resurrection or new kingdom, a coming kingdom future. Every All Saints, I remember Freedom's Church in Gibsonville. And I always just loved this ceremony where they were across the street. Across the road from their cemetery. Actually, the road hadn't been there when the church was built, founded in 1745,
right.
You know. Huge cemetery. It's been there almost 300 years. And on All Saints, on the closing hymn, we proceed out of the church, mm-hmm. you know, and there's flowers in the on the porch and buckets, and people take stems, and the traffic is held up, and we're singing for all the saints and et cetera, all across the street through the gates, the iron gates, and think of the gates of heaven, and you go into the cemetery and you put in flowers on graves, those of your ancestors and those of your ancestors in the faith.
Right.
Every grave gets a flower as we remember their past and their witness to us and celebrate our hope and their hope in the resurrection. That's the theme of the day.
Big deal. Everybody knew what the church was doing there on that day, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Well, let's move on into our text today. We'll be looking at Isaiah 25. We've got Psalm 24 as our psalm text. We move into Revelation, talk about hope and the future, the ending of the book of Revelation with the new heaven and the new earth. And then we'll join with the folks in John chapter 11 at the grave of Lazarus. So plenty of adventure here today. What you want to say about these texts?
Well, one thing is, John, I just want to admit that Isaiah 25:6 is one of the Bubba's favorite texts. We are always ready for a feast of rich food.
Well-aged wines. Oh, yes.
Of course, by our definition of well-aged might not be the same as anybody else's.
Whatever's good down there on the shelf at the Publix.
That's
that'll
right.
work. Yeah.
Whatever. Mm. We don't worry about the age as long as the price is right. Anyhow, moving forward, chapters 24 through 27 of Isaiah is sometimes referred to as Isaiah's little apocalypse. Not particularly apocalyptic in the sense of, you know, mass destruction and things we think about apocalyptic. It's more hopeful.
Yeah.
Of the coming kingdom.
Yeah, future oriented, not traditionally what we would call apocalyptic.
Right. And it's accepted by most of the scholars that this was much later than the rest of the book of Isaiah in terms of composition. It lays out the view that beyond the day of judgment, the reign of God will be established. It's really focusing on that reign of God, and it has two beautiful images of what that future, that good, pleasant, and important future is going to look like. One is the banquet on Mount Zion, you know, on this mountain. These were a particular mountain, the Mount Zion. And like I said, a feast of rich foods, a feast of well-aged wines, rich food filled with marrow. You know, those of us in the West and in America, most of us that spend our time trying to lose weight and not mm-hmm. eat rich food,
right,
may not quite get how important this is in a world in which most of the reverse was true.
Yeah.
You know, and so this was a perhaps we could think of it, a world in which you can eat your fill of biscuits and gravy and never get fat.
Now, that's the Bubba version for sure. Right,
that's the
there.
Bubba version.
All the biscuit and gravy you want.
Mm-hmm. Never get fat. But the second image has to do with destroying, I love this, the shroud that's cast over all people, the sheet that's spread over all nations, this image of this thing that just hovers, this issue of death.
Right.
You know, he will swallow up death forever. Of course, Paul picked up on that phrase.
Right.
In Romans.
Paul knows his Hebrew scripture, and certainly John knows his Hebrew scripture, John the Revelator, as yep. we pick up the echo of wiping away all tears from their faces.
So he talks a bit about wiping away the tears and the disgrace, and et cetera, for them, and that sort of thing. So then there's this last theme in here about waiting. Now, in this text, because it's set in the future, it talks, we have waited, so that he might save us. This is the Lord for whom we have waited. Well, we're on the backside of that, and we're still waiting.
Right.
And so one of the themes for today is this is what's coming, and the patience with which we need to wait. Set within itself in the Old Testament, this is talking about Isaiah's talking to the people sometime later, saying, whatever adversity we go, we look back to those who were in exile. And a time came when God has brought them to, they lived on this hope of being restored to God's mountain. Just so, we work through whatever we're going through, looking back to those who persevered in the faith and looking forward to the same promise they believed, that God's restoration.
In terms of remembrance, which allows us to move into hope, we do remember the mighty acts of God. We remember that God has moved in the lives of those who have come before us, and as well as in our own lives. But God's people have always waited. There is always this aspect of God is working, God is present. That's a very present tense kind of thing. And yet, the tension is, but we are also waiting for God to act, waiting for God to work, waiting for the completion of God's work. So a nice creative point of tension that the act of remembering brings.
And this might be just a hair of a Lutheran edge. I may be guilty of that every once in a while.
You're kidding me.
But one of the things of looking back at the saints is not so much that we look at them as examples, but examples of what? Not examples of here are superheroes of the faith that we must emulate, but in terms of what they did, but looking back at their lives and seeing what God did in their life. Mm-hmm. It's all about God and not about us. Even when we look to the saints, our remembrance is how they trusted God and how God acted in their lives, and God can act in our lives as well.
That'll do it.
All right.
Let's talk about Psalm 24. Great perspective. I love the opening line. Earth is the Lord's and all that's in it. The world and everyone who lives in it. I just, if you want to grab a verse that says it's all about God, it's hard to beat that one.
Well, there are several things with this text that just work together for me. One is, of course, on verse 5, the verse 3, tying back to the Isaiah text. Who may ascend the mountain of the Lord? And the Isaiah text begins, on this mountain. You know, always the Hebrew scripture text is picked to go with the gospel, and the psalm is picked to be a response,
right,
and complement the Hebrew scripture. So that's complementing in that way. Who may stand on God's mountain? This was originally an entrance liturgy. That is, you know, pilgrims coming to Jerusalem, to the temple, for a variety of festivals. And as they're ascending, because the temple was up, and the doors are the doors of the temple, this is a liturgy that's sung. We're not sure exactly how. You know, we're not sure what all those directions you see in the psalmody, the psalm books really mean. But it's either responsively sung or pre-singing this or the pilgrim singing that or everybody together. But the symbolism is they're coming up and the doors are open and who's allowed to come in.
Okay? Right.
So
right.
Get that kind of liturgical worship image. The one there, the holy hill, the mountain of the Lord, the temple precinct, God's earthly habitations. It's not a big a jump as you think, because for the Hebrews, this is where God lives. God's mm-hmm. in the temple, in the holy of holies. And so who's allowed to come in there? Who can come? And it has this, who those of innocent hands and purity of heart, etc., ethical standards. And of course, the early church then tied in with this and started thinking of Jesus going to Hades, you know, going to hell.
Yeah.
And the gates of hell, and who can stand against it? Lift up your heads, O gates, and be lifted up, O everlasting doors. The King of glory may come in. So then got Jesus. So even this even gets tied up in an old Appalachian gospel song. You probably know the Florida Boys version, the little carpenter boy from the carpenter shop. You know that song? Who is this King of glory?
Yeah.
Coming in and marching everybody out, you know, and it's great lines, you know, about that. That's tied directly to the last half of this psalm.
Right.
About Jesus going to hell and clearing things out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Rambo Jesus, taking names, kicking butts, man. That's Let's right. go. Yeah.
So this is all tied in with all, and that's a tie-in with All Saints, because part of All Saints is this kind of the great hope of the resurrection. And this text, the early church, medieval church, with the harrowing of hell, tied this together with this image of Jesus going down during those 3 days and opening the gates of hell and releasing the souls in prison, as Peter put it. And it's a great image to play with.
Certainly could be. Again, lots to evoke the imagination here. One of the best things we can do. Let the spirit in. Let these words in. Let them stir things up a little. Good, strong language. That is without a doubt what happens in the text from Revelation.
Oh, boy.
Talk about opening the doors and just throwing wide the vision of the future and stirring our imaginations. Let's talk a little bit about this beginning of the closing vision here in the book of Revelation.
Yeah, this is one in a series of visions. The victorious Jesus, the binding of Satan, the reign of the martyrs, and now the new Jerusalem, a new heaven and a new earth. And, you know, what's interesting is what's not here, what it lists is not going to be here. There will not be any tears. There will not be any death. There will not be any mourning. There will not be any crying. There will not be any pain, all through verse 4. And then in verse 5, it says, I am making all things new. What this new heaven and new earth is vision is reversing Eden, reversing the fall. You know, because the fall introduced tears and death and mourning and crying and pain. And the vision that John of Patmos has is God is going to as we've been working since that moment, since Cain and Abel, God has been working to reverse and put the damage back and make all things new so we can start again.
I like that image, this reversal. We bring it up a lot. The theme is everywhere in Scripture, the God of the great reversal, and it really does when you consider the bookends of what we know as the Bible, creation, good in every way, the fall, the loss of Eden, and now we're coming back, Jesus bringing in the new creation, dealing with that which has haunted us, that shroud of death we looked at earlier. Now, it's all being removed, and we re-enter the new creation, the new heaven and the new earth, just as God has always intended it. You don't want to forget that great story arc as you're working.
Well, this is one of those days, and they come up every once in a while, as Will Willimon said, sometimes you just have to remind people of the whole story.
Yeah.
And you take a place, and you this is one of those days you can tell people the whole story. Because every week we're hearing bits of the story, and it's like watching one of those serials, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they used to, and the Perils of Pauline. Almost every they used to call it, you know, where she'd come to the end. There's a cliffhanger, and tune in next week. Well, sometimes you just got to get in touch with the whole story. And I remember going to visit folks in the home, and there was this one lady I'd go to visit, and she wouldn't turn her soap opera off in the afternoon. You know, but she, and our most of our visitation was her during the commercials, her catching me up on the story arc.
Right, right.
I finally said, Wendy, are you not watching one of your favorite soaps? She says, when the news is on.
Come on and see me during the news.
So I started coming to see her during the news, but I'd never forget. Whenever I was there, she would catch me up on the story arc from the last time I had been there. We had to be caught up on the story arc every once in a while.
Well, I love this passage from Revelation. This is the completion of the gospel. This is God with us. This is, again, the good news we've been reading about from beginning to end throughout Hebrew Scripture, in the Gospels, in the Epistles. This indeed is God, the dwelling place of God, the true tabernacle, is now with us. God is their God, and we are God's people.
It's unfortunate that sometimes we don't hear enough about this, except at funerals.
Correct.
You know, people, and this is one of my ads for lectionary preaching, because if you're not careful, you'll only pick this stuff at a moment of death, and then we'll think it's only about death, mm-hmm. and God comforting us in our grief by saying, but there is the hope of the resurrection, mm-hmm. when in reality, this language is about every day we live. And knowing that whatever we're facing, God has this future in mind, and we're part of that now. Mm-hmm. We're to act as part of that now. We're to live as part of that kingdom now.
God is with us, and that is stretches back to eternity past and forward to all eternity future from our perspective. And I just love it. That's the gospel. God is with us. Well, you mentioned that many times we relegate this passage from Revelation to funerals. If we're not careful, we'll do the same thing with the story of Lazarus and the good news that's packed in here to John chapter 11. Let's move on in to this very rich gospel.
One of the interesting things is, as you say, this text and the one about in my Father's house are many mansions.
Right. John 11, John 14. We go to those. Yeah.
We go to those for funerals. We admit it. But we need to step outside of it and think of some other things it means. Mm-hmm. God is a God of the living and not the dead, is a major mission message here. Jesus acts on his own time and not ours. It's interesting. What I want to suggest, if you're going to preach on this text on this day, is that you tell the whole story of chapter 11 into the beginning of chapter 12. And that can be done in kind of quick scenes, so that this story then becomes the major part of the sermon.
Right.
But you build up to it about Jesus didn't come, you know, the mm-hmm. the whole encounters of not coming, waiting 2 days, et cetera, trying to say, what is John trying to tell us here? Jesus acts on his own time and not ours is one thing.
Right.
And Jesus, I remember the old mountain preacher, they said, would say that God doesn't always come when you expect him, but he's always on time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a message here, you know, and it's curious. You're the disciple you love, one you really care about, is dying. And he says, well, I'll wait. And they said, oh, he's dead. He's not really dead. He's just asleep. Don't worry about it. You know?
Yeah.
The second thing is that when Jesus acts, his act is to make God known. It's not, again, just in response to something we want, but it's to make God known. I was looking at the seminary website at Pacific Lutheran Seminary, the Facebook page. I glance at it every once in a while. My son's a student there. So I had a quote from the preaching professor, and she was preaching in chapel, and she said to the students, you know, actually preaching is not your job. Making sure the gospel is heard is your job.
Ah.
Making sure the good news is heard is your job. Jesus acts to make the good news of the kingdom heard. Everything he does has that in mind as its object.
I think that's significant. Where there's a lot of both jokes and wonderment around verse 35. Jesus wept. Later, again, he says he's powerfully moved, not just moved, he's disturbed.
Yep.
Just before he speaks the words, "Lazarus, come forth," I think there's a significant cost here for making the gospel heard. There's a cost for Jesus. I have come to believe there's a significant cost for Lazarus.
Right.
He's calling Lazarus back. And this whole waiting is part of remembrance. Again, that runs through these scriptures here. If I'm thinking about what we're remembering on this day, God's people have always waited. We too wait. Jesus acts in his own time. And it is the waiting that will lead to hope. Paul uses that idea to talk about the need for perseverance, the need for staying steady. But it's all still hard.
Yeah.
It was hard for Mary and Martha. Lord, if you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died.
We have a sense, and I'm not sure exactly where it comes from, but it may be our consumer personalities and culture, is that, you know, church is supposed to make you feel good.
Right.
It's supposed to make your life better. It's like, you know, going to church is like playing a country song backwards. You get your dog back, your wife comes back, you know, all of those things, country song thing, it gets reversed, you know. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't happen that way. I remember Benny Biedenbaugh, who taught New Testament at the Lutheran Seminary in Columbia, used to say, yeah, the truth will make you free, but first it'll make you miserable.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and Jesus becoming the rain is, now Lazarus, I don't know how Lazarus felt about being dead. You know, you hear all about the light and all this, but you know.
Yeah.
He could have been like, what? I'm back.
I don't want to go back. No.
He might have been happy to come back. I don't know. But there was a price for him because he had to die again.
He did.
Most of us dread death once. He had to die again.
Yeah.
So there is. And one of the real, and I'll tie that in with one of the things I was going to say, is that Jesus's act has repercussions. One of the things is he looks at this and he knows what's going to happen. One of the things that's greatly disturbed, word, the Greek word here, has implications of anger. Now, it's not the same as he was very irate, but it has this edge of anger in it. It's an unhappy disturbed. It's a frustrated disturbed. Mm-hmm. And I think he was disturbed at the very idea of death. This is part of that thing we've been talking about, because Adam and Eve and the fall, as the scripture tells us, introduced death. And death was not God's intention for humanity. Jesus is very angry about death and what death has done. He starts crying when he sees his beloved Mary and Martha crying. He gets greatly disturbed when he's standing in front of the tomb. He knows what death has done. And he's very human in this moment in which he's feeling, like we do, the great weight of the loss of someone we love.
I agree. I think this is an opportunity to tie in to those deep things that we feel and experience. Yeah. You know, part of me, tongue planted partially in cheek, you know, would play around with the idea of titling this sermon, "Life Stinks." Talk about the visceral feel here, you know, he's going to bring him out, and they give him this last minute warning. Hey, he's been in there 4 days. He smells. And so here's Jesus in the middle of it, just a stinking moment.
You may remember better than I do. I was looking. I think my King Jimmy's at home. It says here there is a stench because he's been dead 4 days. That's our new RSV. Something in my memory says that King James said, "Lord, he stinketh."
He stinketh. But Lord, he stinketh. And so maybe I would call this life stinketh. And so
life
does,
stinketh.
And so does dying. However, the good news is, and then, like you said, how do we position it? The good news can be heard here.
Well, there's a gospel summary that comes at the end of this. And that's why you got to carry on a little bit further, because after Lazarus comes out, he's unbound, that's when they begin to plot against Jesus in the book of John. Mm-hmm. That's when they begin to say, we've got to kill this guy. So, you know, there's a Reformation image of the holy exchange that on the cross, Christ took on our sin and we took on God's holiness. On the cross, Jesus took on our death and we received his life. Well, the image here is the tomb that Lazarus comes out, but the payment for that, Jesus is going to go in. And that's the gospel. You can use that image and talk about the gospel of what Jesus sacrifices for us. And that's what John's intent is here, is for us to see that our life is brought to us by Jesus' death.
Absolutely. And that is a fine way to end up with your sermon. And it's going to need to be a pretty fine way for us to end up with the show today, Bubba. I've appreciated it, enjoyed it. All Saints Day is not a real big, item on the traditional calendar for Baptists, but I believe I may have to work a little in this year.
If you can move Remembrance Day, is that what they call it?
Decoration Day.
Decoration Day, yeah. Over to November 1st.
That's for sure.
It's the liturgical decoration day as well.
That's it. As long as we can have some fried chicken, we'll be fine.
Oh, yeah, there's always a dinner.
That's it. Hey, Bubba, not much else for us to do today other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Mama Told Me by Frank Anea. We go out this session with Open the Gates of the Temple, composed by Francis, Fanny Crosby, and Mrs. Joseph Knapp, performed by Nelson Eddy.
Open, open the gates of the temple, open the gates of the temple. Open the gates of the temple, through bonds on the conqueror's way. Open your heart, O ye people, that Jesus may enter today. Part from the sick and the dying, forgetting couches of pain. Voices, glad voices with rapture, are swelling, are swelling, are swelling a glad refrain. Voices, glad voices with rapture, are swelling. Lift up thy voice.